Have you ever listened to the pod and thought it would be awesome if Jen stopped being nerdy about movies for 60 seconds and talked about your business instead? Well, my friends, you're in luck. Watch with Jen is looking for sponsors. Do you own or run a theater, bookstore, film fest, website, school, physical media firm, pod, streaming channel, or small business that might like to advertise on Watch with Jen? Whether you're interested in sponsoring one episode or several, please reach out. You can get a hold of me at contact@filmintuition.com. Thanks so much. Hey, this is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. Well, today I am so pleased to have back one of my very good friends and a fan favorite, William Boyle, who is the award-winning author of 8 works of fiction set in the southern Brooklyn neighborhood of Gravesend, where he was born and raised. His books have been nominated for the Hammett Prize, the John Creasy New Blood Dagger Award in the UK, and the prestigious Grand Prix de Littérature Policière in France, and have been included on best of lists in Washington Post, Crime Reads, and more. He currently lives in Oxford, Mississippi, and his latest book, which is coming out in February of next year, is called Saint of the Narrow Street. I'm reading it right now and loving it. So, Bill, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks. I'm doing well, Jen. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be talking to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time. I guess it hasn't been that long, but it's always great to talk to you. And thanks for the good words about the book. Thanks for reading it. Appreciate it.
Thank you for sending it. Yeah, I love it. And I will definitely be posting a photo when this episode goes up, because the cover for this one, I've liked all your covers, but this cover in particular is awesome. Did you have any input? I think people are just going to gravitate to it on the shelf, even if they don't know your work, and they should. But what were your thoughts on the cover?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. I had Soho. This is my first book with Soho, and they've been one of my favorite presses for a while, and they had me fill out a questionnaire about the cover, and okay. I went pretty hard on it. I talked about things I liked, things I didn't, gave them some covers, mostly older stuff that I really, really liked and admired, and
that's
then they
cool.
They came back. They got this designer, Luke Bird, to do this cover, and they came back to me with this and blew me away. I couldn't imagine, like, on the first. I mean, I hear so many horror stories from other writer friends. I've been pretty lucky with covers generally. I don't have anything bad. I mean, some of my stuff I'm kind of a little lukewarm on, but mostly it's all been really positive.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, just as soon as it came in, I was like, man, I didn't know exactly what I was thinking, but I knew kind of generally what I wanted, and they just sort of nailed it. So yeah, it's beautiful. It's really, it feels good to have the sort of book that I think people will just pick up for the cover.
Yeah.
I've always, as a reader, as a kind of browser, I've always responded, like, I've bought a million books that I love just because I think the cover is great. Maybe not a million, a lot,
Mm-hmm.
So it feels good to have a cover like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for those listening, do you want to give us a summary of what the book is about? Maybe what inspired it?
Oh, man. It's the book I've been working on it. It's coming out in February 2025, and I wrote an early draft of it in early 2020, right at the beginning of COVID, which is very different. So it's interesting. I'm going to have to get used to talking about the book, I guess, but it started off as a very different book, where it was going to be set over one night in, or on one night in 1986. And that first draft was that it was, you know, a bunch of like kind of really sprawling cast, set on this one block in Brooklyn in 1986. That draft I wound up junking, you know, after I finished it. I wrote,
you finished the entire thing.
Yeah, I finished
it
and then kind of threw it away. And after that, I wrote Shoot the Moonlight Out, which was my last published book. And
which
then
was wonderful. Yes.
Thank you. And then I wrote another failed novel and threw that one away.
Oh, wow.
And I came back to this book. Something about it was kind of
speaking to you.
Back. Yeah. And I came back to it. And really all I kept was a few of the characters, a few of the main characters. And, you know, I settled Saint of the Narrow Street is the fictional name of the block in the book. I kind of, you know, kept that idea of having it centered around this one block. But this is very different from that early draft because it's set over 18 years. There's four different parts.
Yeah.
Kind of structured like, in my mind, it's kind of like crime novel version of Boyhood in some ways, kind of jumps through.
We're following these people. Yep.
Yeah. So you, I mean, and there is a, I mean, there are two sisters who are the main characters, Arissa and Julia. And the book begins with one of them accidentally killing her abusive husband. And then it kind of sprawls out from there. And this is something that they reckon with over the next 18 years. But so it's basically these four different parts that are kind
connected.
Of compressed. Each of the parts is set over a day or two. So we move through time, but we still have these kind of compressed moments in time. It's about these two sisters and Rissa is the mother of this kid Fab. Fab, you know, begins the book as a baby and we basically trace, as in Boyhood, weirdly, I mean, I was thinking about that movie.
Okay.
You know, 18 years of his life across these four parts. Even though Rissa and Julia are kind of the main figures. And then there's a neighbor who lives across the street, Chooch, who is kind of their pal, helper.
And he's in love with Rissa. Yes.
Love with Rissa. And he was good friends by circumstance more than anything else with her shitty husband.
Yeah, grew up with them. One of those, like, somebody you just grow up with. Yep.
So yeah, I mean that's it, and I'm gonna have to get better at kind of doing a quick summary, but
put you on the spot. What kind of friend am I?
it stays pretty close to this block, Saint of the Narrow Street, and their lives on this block. I mean it you know moves around a little bit, but not much. It stays pretty focused in Southern Brooklyn, and it's, you know, as I said, there's the first part's 86, and then the middle parts are in the 90s, and then the last part is 2004. So jumps around through those three decades that I'm kind of, you know, when I write about New York, those are the decades that I'm kind of fixated on because that's when I grew up there. That's when I lived there most. I mean, I'm back home all the time. My family's still there, but that's really like the place as I knew it most intimately. So,
yeah, I love it. And it actually being like a neighborhood story, another one of his, I kind of compare him to Lumet or Sales. It's kind of perfect because you could imagine the actress we're going to be talking about today starring in an adaptation of one of Bell's books, for sure. If it was made into an HBO series or a movie, you could imagine Edie Falco being perfect for a lot of these roles. So when we were talking about themes for today, I've had Bill on. We've talked about a million cool things, underrated Italian movies, done Nicolas Cage, Jennifer Jason Leigh, French crime movies. We've talked about a lot. And I love this idea. We also did an episode on John Sayles to talk about Edie Falco, who is one of our favorites for sure. So what is it about Edie Falco that you think makes her stand out? She's one of our great actresses. Do you remember like the first thing you really saw her in that made a big impact? Was it Sopranos or was it before that?
I mean, first off, she is one of those, I mean, you know, obviously I love movies and movies all the time and watching movies all the time. And that inspires my writing as much as the books I'm reading and the music I'm listening to. And then there are a bunch of people that I do think about when I'm writing, actors that I love. And Edie Falco is definitely one of them. I mean, she is someone I imagine into the stories that I'm writing all the time. I know I've loved her for, I mean, as long as I can remember, really. Sopranos was not the first. I knew her pretty well by then. And James Gandolfini, I loved them both, you know, before that show, because they kind of popped up in a lot of things.
So many things, like Homicide: Life on the Street for Edie Falco, the Hal Hartley movies.
Yeah, so that was huge for me. Those, you know, I was getting seriously into movies. I turned 12 in 1990. That was really the time that I was starting to just, you know, see everything that I could see and really, you know, become the movie. I mean, I loved movies before then, but that was really the time when I started actively like going to the video store every day if I could and seeing as much stuff as I could. So, you know, there was the fact that she was popping up in those Hal Hartley movies you mentioned were, you know, those were movies I loved early on, Trust and The Unbelievable Truth, a couple of Abel Ferrara movies.
Yeah. She
popped up in The Addiction and briefly in The Funeral. Laws of Gravity was a huge movie for me. You know, that's still a movie I go back to a lot. I mean, I think you can see and feel its influence all over my books. And that's Nick Gomez's movie. And I think that's probably, I could be wrong, I could be forgetting something, but that's 92, I think. And that felt like the biggest part I'd seen her in. She's not the lead in that movie, but she's a substantial kind of.
Yeah. She earned an Independent Spirit Award nomination for that. That is a new one for me. Last year, my friend Donald Logue and his son Finn were obsessed with this movie and they kept talking about it. And his son Finn is like, "It's the truth, Jen." And he kept calling it the truth and telling me I had to go on YouTube and watch. So I finally watched it. And oh my God, she is great in this movie. And and it was cool because it kind of coincided with on Criterion Collection, them having that Hal Hartley retrospective, which is a lot of fun because then we, you know, you could see past guest and friend James Urbaniak popping up and things, and Edie Falco, who always kind of played like in those early ones, kind of sexy or this bad girl. She has some really memorable moments. She's not the lead, but you don't forget her. And so I did love that. And I guess Laws of Gravity is what got her Tom Fontana saw for Homicide: Life on the Street.
Yeah.
Immediately cast her. Said like she does something real and simple and just like cuts. There's no, you know, there's no bullshit. There's no artifice with her. I think that's why we love her.
Absolutely. And she, I mean, you know, that movie, if people who are listening to this haven't seen that movie, you should see it. It got a good Blu-ray a few years ago from Kino. It's on Prime right now, but it's one of the great, I love movies where people are screaming at each other, over each other. And this is maybe the ultimate, just like people just screaming at each other for 90 minutes.
It's very Cassavetes, very like, these were like all classmates at SUNY Purchase. And so, you know, it's a group of friends and kind of that core group of actors and filmmakers kind of permeated through the same stuff. And years later, it got her, well, she had a small speaking role in Bullets Over Broadway. And the assistant to the costumer was Eric Mendelson, who was a SUNY Purchase classmate. Yeah. And he wrote and directed her in Judy Berlin and Three Backyards. I love both of those. I own the DVD for Three Backyards. I'm like the one person that you know, sought that out. And for Judy Berlin, I actually, that's one of when DVD Netflix, my old employer, closed, they were giving away movies, and I was already on the 10 out at a time, so I got like 20 movies. And one of the ones I made sure to get a couple from the shooting gallery, that company. And so one was You Can Count on Me. And another one was Eric Mendelson, Judy Berlin, because these are movies that, you know, I worried, are they going to be around? So I love Judy Berlin. We actually wanted to talk about it, but it's almost impossible to find. It's one of the missing movies. Like I was talking to Nancy Savoca and her husband, Richard Gay, about their organization Missing Movies and how many of these great films are missing. And this was one of the ones they talked about. So we need to get on that. Let's resurrect Judy Berlin.
I actually just rewatched it yesterday. Yeah. I loved it too. I rewatched it yesterday. I managed because I remembered that it is on rarefilm.com, which is a really good resource for like those missing movies. It's one of the only places you can sometimes find stuff that you can't find elsewhere. So I was glad. And I love Three Backyards too. I have that on, I got that DVD.
Yeah.
I love both of those movies. But you also touched on some of the other stuff that really, you know, for me, I was always drawn to those kind of, you know, Italian American New York actors. And they all, I mean, so many of them worked in the same circles. That all coalesced on The Sopranos. Like you'll watch a lot of the early New York indie 90s stuff, and there's all these Sopranos people popping up and stuff. And then they all come together on The Sopranos. Because I think it's all Georgianne, what's her name? Christopher Walken's wife, Georgianne Walken. Sheila Jaffe, like they were casting all this stuff, and there's this pool of great New York, you know, Italian American actors that was pretty limited, but also those folks showed up and just all the stuff I loved, and she was one of them. Turturro, obviously, Steve Buscemi, you know, that whole Michael Imperioli, all those folks. I also, you know, she went to, as you said, SUNY Purchase. I went to SUNY New Paltz.
Okay.
And so I think I always kind of, you know, I liked that. I mean, she's a New Yorker, Brooklyn roots. I mean, I think she mostly grew up on Long Island, but she, you know, she was born in Brooklyn, and then had this SUNY connection. And then all this, like I said, all these kind of indie directors that I was drawn to early on, that's where, you know, I started to see her. I was a huge Homicide fan, so that
was
a big thing seeing her in those. I think she was in 4 episodes of Homicide. She pops up in Copland. I mean, she's in so much stuff throughout the 90s where she's memorable, and just, you know, I mean, I guess probably Judy Berlin is kind of the biggest part she has in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that at the time. I saw that later. But I think then, you know, because that's the same year as The Sopranos, I think it's 99. So obviously things change for her post-Sopranos.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like you were saying, that wonderful well of New York talent and a lot of Italian-American actors. When I talked to Nancy Savoca, I watched a clip online. And also, I think our friend Sean Burns mentioned this too. It happened at his screening where somebody saw the movie Household Saints. Yeah. And then they asked her, you know, what was it like working with the cast of Sopranos or something like that? And she said, no, the Sopranos is working with my cast. All these great New York movies that were made before that, they knew exactly who to draw from. And one of them was Edie Falco, who is amazing as Carmela, and you said you just rewatched Sopranos. It's been too long for me. I was thinking of rewatching too. Yeah, so this is kind of it's going to inspire me, I think. Yeah.
I did. I rewatched it earlier this year. I guess, I mean, this is probably my fourth time through. Obviously, it's a show I love. It's huge,
Yeah.
like, I mean, but this was, I think it was just prompted by the 25th anniversary. I started rewatching it and just burned through it again. It's just an incredible show. I mean, largely because of her.
Yep.
She's remarkable on it. I mean, there's a ton of, I
She's
mean.
the heart. But she's the heart, but at the same time, we see sides of her that shows she's just as capable of being ruthless and cutting, and she knows what she's
Oh
doing.
yeah.
It's such a complicated role. I love it.
Yeah, and she, and that, I think that, coming back to what's, appealed about her work to me throughout, 30 plus years that I've been a fan, it's she's, I mean, she's always, and we'll see that in the films we're talking about today, she's always choosing messy, complicated
Yes.
characters. I mean, there is almost no part she plays that I can think of that isn't that. She's not afraid of those sorts of characters,
No.
and in fact is wholly drawn to them, and those are the characters that I'm drawn to. I mean, she often will play, kind of unlikable characters, or
Yeah, the messy. Yeah, kind of like Holly Hunter talked about wanting to get in the sandbox and play people she was scared of or that were so far different from herself, and finding like that's the way you can explore it is through acting. And we see her do that. You can imagine she would have been like a great part of the Cassavetes company or one of those actors back in the day for sure. And when we were talking about movies to cover, we wanted to make sure we highlighted these early ones, and I'm sure we're going to reference them a bunch of times. But the first one chronologically that we wanted to chat about was Sunshine State, which I know John Sayles actually wrote that part for Edie Falco. Yeah, he kind of wrote it for the leads for sure. This is a film I remember seeing when it came out. I hadn't revisited it. I will be honest up front. I remembered liking it more than I actually did now. I think it's a movie where there's so many amazing scenes, but I think it's more like a collection of great scenes. So I don't know if it all hangs together for the running time of the film, but so many good performances in this movie, and that Sayles touchstone of getting into the humanity and the social realism of these people, and just listening to people talk. I think it's you can see like imagine Robert Altman would have loved this movie. Yeah.
I mean, I saw it when it came out, and I've watched it a couple of times since. And yeah, I really, I mean, I like it quite a lot. I think it's, Sayles's, I mean, I like all of Sayles's
Oh,
work. Like,
yeah,
I
for
mean,
sure.
there's nothing I don't like, and of his later work, it's up there for me. I mean, I think both this and Gopher Sisters are really kind of underrated. I mean, I think it does kind of have the feel of almost like a TV show more than
Yeah,
in a
Kind of a tapestry. Yep.
I mean, it feels a lot like. And we talked about, I think we talked about Limbo in our sales episode. I mean, it
I
feels,
love that movie.
I love
Yeah.
Limbo too. It feels a lot like the first half of Limbo in
Oh,
some
that's a
way.
good point. Yeah.
That it's this kind of sprawling portrait of this place and all these characters. It doesn't quite have like the mystery at its heart that a movie like Lone Star does, but it does, just does, it does get to the kind of the heart of the place through this tapestry, as you said, of characters. But it doesn't do obviously what Limbo does in its second half. It really kind of continues down the path of just following these characters. And yeah, I think there are just, Sayles is so good with you know, casting and
Angela Bassett is Angela the other Bassett. One he wrote the role for sure. You have Timothy the two, Hutton. I mean,
they're the two great performances. All the performances are really good in the movie, but Angela Bassett and Edie Falco are both phenomenal in it, I think.
Yes.
I was watching it. I was rewatching it this time with just kind of focused on her. And I do think she gets some of the best lines in the movie, some of the best memorable scenes in the movie. It came out, what year did it come out?
2002. Yep.
So it's right in the midst of The Sopranos.
Yes.
Which is, you know, her choices. I mean, she's always making interesting choices. I mean, I imagine that with the success of The Sopranos, she could have done a whole lot of other stuff. But she always had that kind of, and maintained that kind of independent spirit. I mean, I think she did, you know, other stuff, probably TV stuff that came along.
Yeah. She was in a couple big things. Like she had a role in Random Hearts and Freedom Land a few years later and stuff.
She's in Avatar. Is she in some of the Avatar?
She's in, some of the Avatar movies. But she had, I think, a non-speaking part in Private Parts. But overall, when it came to like roles she really wanted to dive into, she stuck with the indies for sure. And this is, again, just typical sales, a wealth of talent. You're looking at Angela Bassett, like we said, Jane Alexander, Timothy Hutton, Mary Steenburgen, Bill Cobbs. I love Mary Steenburgen. Watching it this time, I was reminded of another movie. This is an aside, but have you seen Miss Firecracker at all?
Oh, yeah.
I just kind of thought, oh my gosh, this feels like a continuation for Mary Steenburgen, who's another actress I love. Yeah. I love seeing these actresses as they age get really good parts, because so often they don't. And, you know, these independent writer directors step up, thank goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and Sales is, I mean, you got a lot of his kind of company.
Yes. That.
You too, Gordon Clapp, and there's, again, just I always respond to Sales's movies because, you know, he's so focused on character and place and at getting larger themes and issues through explorations of, you know, just kind of
And there's some interesting themes here. I mean, character is place in this movie a little bit, but it's also shows the multi-generational aspect, some of the questions we all face as we have aging parents, and, you know, when do you save property because it means something to one generation but it's too much work or it's overwhelming for the next generation. Who to sell to, what does it all mean? So there's a lot of question there with this development of Florida. There's sort of a Greek chorus of golfers, which is kind of a funny thing going on through the film, people giving speeches. And then there are these, like you said, Gordon Clapp. I also saw, you know, Miguel Ferrer, some great people popping up. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's just, I think it's an underrated film. And I think, you know, she's particularly, as I said, particularly great in it. And her scene with Timothy Hutton, and just, you know, I love, I mean, we think of her, rightfully so, as a, you know, kind of New York actress. And we associate her largely with her kind of New York centric roles. But she does.
It was cool to see her. Yeah.
She moves away from that here and there. I mean, really, you know, we're looking at least at a couple of movies today that find her, you know, playing people from other places. And I think she does it here in a way that's really, really interesting. I mean, it's an understated performance. I know you had mentioned that you watched the failed Fargo pilot that she did.
Yes, I loved seeing her in that. That was around this time too that she shot that. You can find it on YouTube.
I think it was. I think it was pre. I think it was like 99. I think it was pre Sopranos. I could be wrong.
Oh, was it? Okay. Little bracket of time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because it was. I think the one you can find on YouTube says it's 2003, but that's when it was recorded.
Okay.
Like the failed.
Oh, that Trio Network.
Yeah, the Trio
think.
Network thing.
Yes.
And I think it was pre-Sopranos, which is interesting. I mean, because you would think post-Sopranos, you would think it would have taken off anyway. But that's another example of her, like, you know, playing that character, that March character.
I know. And I'm from Minnesota and I loved her accent in it. So she did very well with that. I thought it was good. Yeah. It's a little over the top, the pilot, but it's cool to see her in that for sure. And yeah, you know, one more thing about Sunshine State is I think it also shows, I mean, Sales from the beginning has been with his producer and partner, Maggie Renzi, has been extremely focused on women's stories. I think this was around the time he made another film, Casa de los Babies. I remember that one, or maybe the year after, or just in this little window of time that he was making some of these. And of course, you know, Passion Fish and Liana and some of his earlier films. Yeah. Go for it.
Sorry. No, I mean, I was just to build off that a little. I mean, I agree. And that's something I've always responded to about his work and been influenced by. But I think this movie also feels the most play-like out of his.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
It's got that quality of like kind of classic, like Tennessee Williams.
Yes, Williams. With the Greek chorus and the way it's set up a little bit. Yeah.
But yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, it is kind of cool to see him working in different modes like that. Like it's more experimental. One of my favorite films he made was Secret of Rowan Inish, of course, and that's a totally different thing. Yeah, more magical realism. But as far as Edie Falco goes, the next one I know means a lot to both of us. I would say it's my favorite of the ones we're discussing. And I think maybe after like Judy Berlin and Laws of Gravity, maybe like her best performance in film. Of course, her best performance is obviously Carmela, and she got to really dig deep there. And unfortunately, I've never seen her stage work, but I'm sure that's, you know, wonderful. But we're talking about Outside In. I have been a big fan of the Duplass brothers and Lynn Shelton, and this is them working together. I love this movie, and I know it means a lot to you, so I'm going to let you take it away.
Yeah, I also love it. I mean, I think this is probably, I'd say, my favorite performance of hers in a film.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge, huge Lynn Shelton fan, and I like the Duplass brothers a lot. And, you know, so I'd been already, you know, following at that point Lynn Shelton's career for a while, and I've obviously also been a longtime fan of Edie Falco, and it was such an interesting to me at the time before I'd seen the film. You know, it just struck me as such an interesting combination, or you know, just I couldn't quite imagine what it was going to be before I saw it, and it's a film that I think about a lot, that's had, you know, definitely a big impact on me as a writer. I think her performance is remarkable in it. There's just, you know, so much kind of pain and yearning under the surface. Mm-hmm. And really,
and she's trying to control it, and it's see all of it. Yeah.
And it's really, I mean, you know, when you look at her list of, aside from like the TV stuff, in particular The Sopranos and Nurse Jackie, when you look at the list of films she's made, even Judy Berlin, which is brilliant, it's an ensemble movie.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a huge part. I mean, she's the title character, but
yeah,
still one of four or five kind of main characters in that movie. Sunshine State is an ensemble movie. Laws of Gravity, she's a supporting role. You know, all those movies, except for, I watched this movie of hers just recently for the first time from the 90s called Cost of Living, which is pretty interesting. That's a lead role. Not a great movie, but really good. And her performance is terrific. But anyway, that's a long way of saying she didn't really have that many film roles. And Outside In is definitely the kind of meatiest role she gets as an actor in film. And she really does a lot with it, I think. It's a beautiful performance, tender, sad, you know, all those things. And yeah, I mean, it's remarkable. And like I said, I love Lynn Shelton's movies, and I got to meet her one time right after this came out. It had just come out.
Oh, wow.
I think maybe, I can't remember exactly how long before, but my friend Jack Pendarvis, who writes for Adventure Time and is also a great fiction writer, he was pals with Lynn, and she was shooting Sort of Trust with Marc Maron. In Alabama. And she invited him to the set, and he knew I was a big fan, so he asked, you know, her if I could come along, and I did. So I got to meet her on that set, and I got to tell her, I mean, one of the first thing I told her when I met her was how much I love this movie. And we talked a little bit. Unfortunately, the day that we were on set, she was filming, if you've ever seen Sort of Trust, she was filming the one scene in Sort of Trust that she is in.
So she was very busy
in the scene and wasn't really behind the camera as much that day. But we did get to talk to her a bunch. And as I said, I did talk to her about Edie Falco and this movie, and how much this movie, you know, mattered to me and affected me. And it's a beautiful movie, beautiful performance. I think their chemistry, her and Jay Duplass, is really...
Lynn co-wrote it with Jay, and he stars in it. For people who haven't seen it, do seek it out. I know it's on Netflix, and it is wonderful. It's a story about when Jay's character was 18, he was involved, his friends, like somebody, they just wanted beer at a convenience store. There was a shooting, and he didn't commit. He didn't even know his friend had a gun. He went to jail for 20 years because he stayed behind to, you know, try to assist the man who died. And Edie Falco was his high school teacher and worked on getting him freed from prison. Their relationship first started where she would just send him ideas for books or homework or things to keep him busy, keep his mind occupied. Then it grew into a friendship. And by the time the movie starts, when he is released, he is definitely in love with her. She realizes he has a crush kind of on day one. And it's been an emotional relationship between the two that goes beyond friendship. And it kind of developed. She's a married woman, unhappily married, we learn, with a teenage daughter. You know, it's a complicated role played by is it Caitlin Dever or Kat? Caitlin Dever. Ben Schwartz plays his brother. It's just a small film made in the or set in the Pacific Northwest area. And it's beautiful. You have music by Andrew Bird. I think it's really, really well done. It's so emotional. These people, you feel like you know them well. You actually are invested in just their journey. Emotionally, you worry about both of these people, and you wonder, should they be together? Should they not? Should he get away from all of these people? Like, is he risking getting put back in? There's a little suspense going on, emotional stakes. You don't know where it's going to go, but it never really follows any kind of cliched, turn of events. There isn't like huge things that you would expect there's things that happen. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but I like the way that they handled the whole thing. I also think the ending is so subtle and beautiful, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of the movie Falling in Love a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's subtlety. it's a great final scene. And I think one of the things, especially rewatching it this time, that struck me was just how much, you know, how much they let the kind of story sit under the surface.
Yes.
There's not a lot of exposition about all that backstory we're mentioning. I mean, you kind of figure that stuff out as you go, and it really,
it takes a long
time. Really effective, because I think a much, you know, lesser writer, director,
would have established all that in the first.
Yeah. We would have had a flashback, or we would have had voiceover or something telling us, you know, but they let that stuff really just kind of, you know, get in there subtly and slowly. Yeah. And the movie's all the more effective for that. And with her character too, you know, so much of her is kind of under the surface. Yearning before, but you can really see it. I mean, she's, you know, as you said, she's in this kind of unhappy marriage. And she's yearning for purpose. I mean, you know,
really, more than just a dude. Yeah.
It's not about him. I mean, that's one of the things that's so great about the film. It's not just, I mean, there is a love story element there between them. But for her, it's about much more than that. It was about helping him. It was about finding that purpose and
finding her own. Yeah.
Wanting to continue to do that. Mm-hmm. Right. That ending scene is so, so good. Mm-hmm. It's one, you know, it's a great, I could be wrong about this, but I feel like I'm right that there's so many good close-ups on them in the movie. It's just so much about their faces, both of their faces.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And she looks, you know, she looks real in this movie, and she, you know, does so much with her eyes and with her expressions. And, you know, that's another thing about this performance that always just, you know, just hits me.
Yeah, because it was shot in something like 20 something days, because these indie movies don't have the budget for it. And so I think I read she just had to like dive in. I don't know how much time she really had to prepare. And the level of understanding she has for this woman. And like we said, there's a love story there, but also the way that unlocks the idea of her life can be more than it is in a number of ways. Yeah. And I think
it's also about this mother-daughter relationship,
which I love. Yeah.
Right. I think that's probably not a thing people talk about enough when they talk about this movie, is that the daughter is such a fascinating
character. Is so interesting, because you can see her sort of, you understand why she probably would resent him for taking up her mom's time. And then she meets this guy, and he's still sort of like a stunted 18-year-old. Essentially. And so they become friends, and then, you know, she's also trying to, in the friendship, maybe understand her mother and see her mother in a different way. I love that part. I think she's really good in it. And we saw, like, in Booksmart, she did more. She's a great actress. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, again, this is like, you know, to me, the one major kind of lead role she's had in a film,
I agree with you.
It's a shame that she hasn't had more roles like this. I mean, I think and even in a movie like Land of Steady Habits, which we'll talk about in a second, she's kind of
secondary.
Mm-hmm. She's kind of, you know, she's great in it, but she doesn't get like what Gandolfini gets in Enough Said. She doesn't quite get that in the Land of Steady Habits, you know.
That's a great segue, because both of those films are from writer-director Nicole Holofcener, who is a filmmaker I love as well. Enough Said is a great film. She also made You Hurt My Feelings, which was the new one, again with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She, you know, made Lovely and Amazing and all these great films from the past, Walking and Talking. And she made Land of Steady Habits, which is kind of the outlier in the group because it is a man's story primarily. And Ben Mendelsohn, who's, you know, a stellar actor, is our lead. It's based on a book that, again, was written by a man. It's not really what you would technically expect when you go into a Hall of Center movie, but it's very well done. Edie Falco plays the ex of Ben Mendelsohn's character. Yeah. Did you see this when this first came out?
Yeah, I saw it when it came out. I'm also a big Nicole Hall of Center fan. And yeah, I mean, I think it's so fascinating that she worked. I think it was back to back. Enough said in this, or
yeah, I believe so.
Mm-hmm. So she, you know, to have both Gandolfini and Edie Falco in her films. I mean, people you probably wouldn't imagine in a Nicole Hall of Center movie. You know, at that time. So that was fascinating to me. I liked it when it came out. I mean, I think. If I remember correctly, the reaction to it was mixed to negative for the most part. But I liked it quite a bit. I mean, it is a little different from her other stuff, I think.
Yeah.
She didn't write. I mean, she adapted it, but it, like you said, it's based on a novel. Like everything else is original, right? Everything else of hers?
Yes. Yeah. One of my favorites she did was Please Give. And, you know, and enough said, it's not maybe at that level, but it's still interesting. I think it's also kind of cool for her, and I'm sure maybe to try something different from a different point of view. And she was really interested in this idea of what it would be like not to be a divorced woman walking around, but to be a divorced man who's handsome and confident and maybe would be a little bit more romantically successful at that stage in his life. And so the beginning of the movie, there were love scenes that I read that Hall of Center just added because she said, I could imagine somebody like a Ben Mendelsohn going to Bed Bath and Beyond and just like picking up a woman or something. And like that would happen. And so we see that happen. Connie Britton is kind of a lead in the movie. There are a couple other great, you know, Elizabeth Marvel has a small role too. But overall, you know, Edie has a small role, but it's, you know, it's a good one. And it is interesting that Nicole worked with the Sopranos. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's, she does have this, I mean, it's a funny movie. I think
it is. Yeah.
You know, it's got some really funny moments. And she does have this that maybe we haven't talked about enough. This kind of, you know, comic thread throughout her.
Yeah. People don't really tap into that enough. You see it kind of her sparkling. She is the effervescent character in Judy Berlin. One of the things.
She's hilarious in Judy Berlin.
Oh my God. It's great. It's a movie that's set on the day of an eclipse. And she is kind of the eclipse character. She's the one that, you know, they all are connected by. And when she's on the screen, you know, she sparkles. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's definitely a big part of her career.
Yeah.
We've mostly
even Nurse Jackie. Yeah. She's
Jackie
funny.
Is really funny. You know, there are other things. I mean, she was in that, I'm blanking on the name of it, but that new Pete Davidson show that was on Apple that came out last year, that she's his mom. She's funny in that. I mean,
Bupkis.
Yeah, Bupkis, that's right.
And also 30 Rock. She was nominated for an Emmy for being on 30 Rock. Yeah.
30 Rock. I mean, you know, I think one of the things we have, I don't want to go off course here too much from talking about the Land of Steady Habits, but from around the same time, it's not really a comic performance, but I do think her performance in Horace and Pete, the Louis C.K. show, is really, it's hard to talk about because of the Louis C.K. stuff, but that is a big ensemble cast. And it's a shame that it's hard to talk about, that he fucked that up, because it is a really good show. And in part, it's a great show, I think, because of her and Steve Buscemi both giving really terrific performances.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the comic stuff in that performance too. So, but she's funny in this film. It's you know, I mean, not as substantial a role, as you said, as something like Outside In, but definitely definitely a, you know, an interesting match, her and Nicole Hall of Center, and her and Ben Mendelsohn. You know, have some good scenes together, good chemistry together.
Yeah. And you can't tell when you put actors together, but I believed them. When you put her with Mendelsohn, you could kind of believe like, oh, this is my husband or was my husband. And her relationship, she's trying to move on. And is it Bill Camp? Am I getting that right? Yes, Bill Camp, who had worked with her husband, and he's kind of protective. I also really like the idea that this is a film that deals with addiction and substance abuse, and also what it's like for like privileged parents, and how that, you know, when is nature, nurture, and the responsibility, like he's kind of at a state of his life where he thinks he's free now, but he also thinks he can go walk in his house. He doesn't really feel comfortable like going to a strip club, but he isn't, you know, in that lonely, I'm going to go to a cooking class stage yet. But at the same time, he retired, he's like aimless. And so he makes mistakes and he's trying to be cool. He's easily brought into a group of kids and starts, using hard drugs without realizing what he's doing. So there's a dark side to this movie that I think she handles really well at a time when maybe that wasn't being reflected on screen. And I think that's something that Edie Falco would have been drawn to as well as an alcoholic. She talked about when she was working on Sopranos, how it was a real hard partying cast. And she would go to she was always invited to the after parties and that kind of thing. And she'd go for 2 minutes. And then she said, I had to leave because it's like, I can't be around that. And so she said, unfortunately, she didn't spend as much time as she wanted. And then, of course, Nurse Jackie, she's dealing with addiction as well. And so I think that is an important part of her story and what she's done. Also, she is someone who adopted two kids. She's a Buddhist. I remember during the second run for Bush, she did like a campaign against Bush ad where she talked about being a mother. And does that administration understand what that's like? And so I think Land of Steady Habits might tap into, just like Outside In, this new, it would have been, I think her kids were like 05 and 08. So it's new maternal understanding and this idea of wanting to make sure your kids are safe and staying away from drugs and what can we do? Yeah.
Yeah, something you said about her being real. I mean, I think that's something that I feel from her in everything she does.
Yeah.
Just feel like she's always real in her film and TV work. I also unfortunately haven't seen her on the stage, but I'm sure the same can be said about her stage performances. I mean, one of the other things I like about The Land of Steady Habits, I mean, I could see people tuning this out because it's just another movie about kind of like rich people and privilege but I, you know, one of the things that I think they tap in, that Nicole Hall of Center taps into in her movies in general, is kind of, and this kind of connects to what draws me to a lot of crime fiction and crime films. I mean, she's not romanticizing this world.
No, not at all.
Very often about unlikable characters. I mean, Ben.
Oh my
Ben
God, Friends with Money is that film.
So that's, I mean, that's something, and again, you know, speaks to Edie Falco's choices. These aren't one dimensional.
Oh no,
characters. These are portraits of highly, you know, complicated and oftentimes unlikable people. So there's a through line there from, you know, movie like, you know, early stuff like Laws of Gravity to a film like this. I mean, seems to have nothing in common on the surface, but it's there. I mean, it's simple stuff getting explored.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any other performances? I rewatched, I know we both rewatched a bunch of stuff. I actually saw, I don't know that I did see it when it came out, Landline,
Oh yeah, I
which
saw that one.
again, it was a supporting part she
Yeah.
has. But I thought that was a very good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that when it came out and remember liking it, but I haven't, it's been, whatever, seven years.
Yeah, been a while.
I rewatched, I was trying to remember, obviously I love those early Hartley movies we mentioned. I love her in The Addiction. Ferrara's The Addiction, I really
Okay.
think is a great early performance. I rewatched The Funeral last night, another Ferrara movie, thinking she was in it maybe more than she was, but she's literally almost, an extra in that movie, weirdly. She's
Yeah.
one
She's in
quick.
the union scene, if I
Yeah, the
remember
union
right.
scene, yeah.
Yeah.
I rewatched a movie from, I think, the late 90s that she pops up in called Hurricane Streets.
Okay.
That's pretty good. She's only got a couple of scenes in it. She plays this the mother of Brandon Sexton's character, who's in jail. She's in jail, and a lot of good moments in that scene. We mentioned Three Backyards. I rewatched, which I think is
Yep.
not as good as Judy Berlin, but really interesting, and one of those movies that kind of gets under your skin.
Yeah.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, I was looking at other stuff she did besides things we've mentioned. Oz, I actually,
All right, that's
this is going to
early.
be, I did not see Oz, but I know she had like she was in 23 episodes, it looks like, of
Yeah,
that.
I never watched Oz either. I mean, I never had HBO. I mean, even when I saw
Yeah.
Sopranos originally, it was like renting it on VHS when it first came out.
Yeah. And other roles, let's see, she was in The Comedian, Megan Levy. Oh, she played Hillary Clinton in
Right,
the
sorry. I haven't watched
impeachment.
that, the
I
American.
have not either. I think the only one of those American Crime Story, I watched the OJ one, but yeah, I need to watch that one as well. But yeah, the early stuff, the Hal Hartley, we both recommend you seek out Laws of Gravity if you have not seen it. Also, looks like, where did you find Judy Berlin? Just so people listening
Judy
know.
Berlin is on this site called Rare Film.
Okay.
It is RareFilm.com. It's just like
Okay.
an internet
Great.
resource where a lot of kind of
Missing.
that lost stuff winds up.
Yeah.
And if ever I can't find a movie, I check out, check there and see. And very often they have that stuff, so it's up there. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a tenuous situation or an illegal situation, but the site is really good and not like a kind of
Okay, not like sketchy.
like
Yeah.
pirate sketchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where
But
you're getting a
this guy,
warning from your internet provider, like, are you sure
no,
you
this
want to
guy,
connect to this? No.
the guy who runs it, it's much more like a reclamation
Expand.
project, just to
Yeah.
like a lot of that stuff pops up on YouTube,
Yeah, for
but it's
sure. My
fallen out
film
of print.
lovers.
Yeah, I mean, and so much that era in particular, it's like if you don't, there's a whole ton of movies that like only ever got VHS release. I think Judy Berlin's one of them. I think Judy Berlin only ever got a VHS release.
Oh,
Maybe
got a DVD because
you
I,
got it. That's
yeah.
right. You talked about the DVD. But there are
But yeah.
a lot of movies even that got, VHS and early DVD releases that are, out of print that just kind of are gone or impossible to see. So, yeah, that's a good resource. Just like kind of like Internet Archive, a lot of times you can find stuff on that site, archive.org.
Yeah.
Cost of Living, I mentioned, I rented that one on like Amazon for $2. It's got like a standard definition streaming version, but that is worthwhile. I mean, if you're an Edie Falco fan, it's worth watching because it is a lead performance. I mean, full on, like she's in basically almost, not every scene in that movie, but she is the main character, and it's kind of a crime film. She kind of plays this drifter who shows up
Okay.
in this town and starts kind of, be stealing somebody's identity a little bit and gets involved with this guy. And she's got a dark past, and that kind of comes back, follows her. It's not, you know, it's a good film. It's interesting. Her performance is pretty great. Not a perfect movie by any stretch. It's got, you know, drags a little, maybe it doesn't quite hold together, but really, really, you know, again, if you're on the hunt for like lead performances from her, one of the most substantial film performances out there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'm trying to think some of the ones we mentioned, of course, Land of Steady Habits and Outside In, you can find on Netflix. Landline, I found on Hoopla, which, you know, would be free with your library card if you have access to it. That is a good resource, kind of like Canopy. These wonderful resources of great films that might be hard to find elsewhere. But Bill, thank you so much for doing this. It was a real pleasure. I'm glad we can celebrate some of these people that I feel like we all enjoy, but maybe don't get the same, you know, recognition or same amount of attention that other actors do. I think, you know, she might not be a marquee name, essentially she is to us, but I loved going back and looking at these, and I think you inspired me. I gotta rewatch Sopranos now.
Yeah, it's never a bad time, but yeah, it feels like a especially good time to sit down and do that. Yeah, and I mean, she's great. Thanks for taking the time to talk about her work with me. It was a lot of fun, and it's always great talking to you.
Yeah, of course. Anytime you have a new idea, you know, just let me know and come on back.
All right. Thanks, Jen.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.